Scientists have long been intrigued and baffled by how human memory works. What happens in the brain when we remember something, and what happens when we forget? New technologies have enabled researchers to begin to unravel how the brain stores memories and how those memories are later retrieved. Michelle Trudeau reports on the latest scientific understanding of our minds and our memories.
The way that your brain remembers something is a stunning achievement. In an instant, at the tilt of a hat or at the hint of a fragrance, your brain's millions of nerve cells catapult you to a long-ago time and place. Memory researcher Daniel Schachter.
We carry in our minds the remains of even distant experiences that tie us to the past in a very special way. Places and people that have long ceased to exist in our lives still continue to exist in our memories, sometimes as ghost-like phantoms, sometimes as crystal-clear portraits.
Our memories sum up our past. So the first day of kindergarten, or learning to ride a two-wheeler, or a first kiss, when put together, makes each of us who we are. And that's why memory is so important.
In order to understand who we are, we've got to understand something about the way that memory works.
And scientists in recent years have come to a profound new understanding about how human memory works. Perhaps the best way to illustrate these new insights is to track a new memory as it's being made. High school graduation. You're there. The music. The slow processional up to the stage. The stillness of the crowd. Your heart beating incredibly fast. The smell of the freshly cut grass. Your parents over there in the audience. Now, to put this in memory, researchers tell us, the first thing your brain does is to break apart this graduation scene into tiny bits and pieces of information, fractioning all the colors, shapes, smells, sounds. Daniel Schachter continues the tour.
So, for example, visual areas of the brain may be analyzing visual aspects of a scene. Auditory areas may be analyzing auditory aspects of a scene.
So, for example, what you see, say the color of your mother's dress, activates nerve cells at the back of your brain in the visual cortex. The smell of the gardenias excites nerve cells in another area called the olfactory lobes. And the pulsating sound of the music turns on nerve cells in yet another region of your brain, the auditory cortex. Neurobiologist Eric Kandel from Columbia University tracks the memory into the interior of individual nerve cells in these areas.
When a nerve cell is excited, it generates an electrical signal which propagates from the beginning of that nerve cell to its end.
Turning on millions of nerve cells, like tumbling dominoes, in different parts of the brain that store the individual bits and pieces of the memory. In addition, signals also arrive at a clump of nerve cells in your brain that is absolutely essential for making a new memory, the hippocampus.
So the initial storage of high school graduation occurs in the hippocampus.
The hippocampus, from the Greek word for seahorse, because this tiny structure is shaped like one. But the job of the hippocampus is nothing short of Promethean. It's your brain's card catalog, holding your recent memories. So, for example, at your graduation, your hippocampus generates a mental index card, noting where all the sights, sounds, feelings, smells, where each of these bits of information is stored throughout your brain.
Graduates of 1984, I dare you to leave your mark.
There are probably things that happen at your high school graduation that you will remember for only a short time and then forget, like that commencement address. And yet there are other aspects of your graduation that will be permanently stored in your memory for decades. To make such a long-term memory, says Eric Kandel, nerve cells actually grow, making more synaptic connections with neighboring nerve cells. So creating a long-term memory, Kandel has found, is an anatomical restructuring of the brain.
So when you remember something in the long term, you actually undergo a head change, an anatomical change in your brain. You actually grow certain connections and then you shrink others so that you end up having a slightly different brain after the learning process than you had initially. And that anatomical change carries the memory for the long term.
Kandel has recently discovered that for an experience to be transformed into a long-term memory, new genes turn on in the brain. New proteins are then manufactured to fuel the structural growth of nerve cells to hold that memory for a lifetime. At this point, the card catalog hippocampus is no longer needed for the maintenance of memories. Long-term storage now occurs elsewhere in the brain, specifically in the regions of the cortex. One way researchers have discovered all this is by studying people who have damage to the hippocampus, patients like EP.
Can you tell me then where you were born?
Sure. Oakland, California.
Uh-huh. And when was it? What year were you born in?
24th of June on 22.
1922?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good.
Memory researcher Larry Squire from the University of California, San Diego, tests EP's memory. EP's hippocampus was recently damaged by disease. As a result, he cannot make any new memories. But EP does have old memories, memories from his childhood and events that occurred when he was a young man. Readily remembering these events that are permanently stored in the cortex of his brain and don't require the hippocampus card catalog to access.
What country did General MacArthur liberate?
Philippines.
Right, good.
But this tall, energetic, charming man cannot remember recent events. He doesn't remember, for example, that he has grandchildren, although they live nearby. They visit, their photos are on the wall. He just doesn't recognize or remember them. So the damage to his hippocampus, explains Squire, means EP cannot add any new chapters to his own life story.
So now how old are you today?
Whatever the year is. I never think about how old I am. It's what can I do today.
Yeah, well, that's an important question.
That's the thing.
What year do you think it is? If you just had to take a
about
guess.
About 72,
isn't it? 1972?
Is that what it is?
The fact that EP can't remember anything about his present life underscores that the hippocampus plays only a temporary role in memory storage, says Squire, and that long-term memories rely on the brain having grown those new connections elsewhere throughout the cortex. But what prompts the brain to change short-term memory into a long-term memory? Well, says memory researcher James McGaugh from the University of California, Irvine, one powerful way to store a memory permanently is to get emotionally excited about the event. Take, for example, McGaugh's own graduation day, nearly 50 years ago, when he played Pomp and Circumstance on the bass clarinet in the school band.
I remember that the next day I was called by the band instructor because somebody had broken into the place where the instruments were kept and had stolen all of the valuable instruments, including the bass clarinet, which at that time was valued at $600, $600 in 1949. And so my remembrance of my high school graduation is this trauma of discovering that this instrument was lost. It was an assault.
The intense emotions of the moment, McGaugh explains, helps firmly file a memory into long-term storage. And McGaugh's research has traced how this works. When you get excited about something, stress hormones speed to the brain, activating a clump of nerve cells deep in the brain called the amygdala, Latin for almond, a structure, says McGaugh, that works like a memory amplifier.
And it says essentially, if I have been activated, this event must have been important. And so it then sends out messages to regions of the brain where the memories are being stored permanently, and it says to them, make stronger memory.
And McGaugh has recently discovered the more powerful the emotions, the more excited the amygdala becomes, and the more firmly the memory is imprinted in the brain. So now let's do a little mental time travel. It is, say, 20 years later. You hear a few bars of Pomp and Circumstance on the radio, and instantly, the whole scene of your graduation, the sights, the sounds, the smells, the feelings, burst onto your mind's eye. How did you do that? How did you retrieve that memory so effortlessly? Harvard University's Daniel Schachter.
When we recall a past event, we're engaging in an active construction, pulling together the bits and pieces of that experience that have been stored and linked together at the time that they occurred. So there's no one place that you could go into the brain and poke around and say, gee, there's the memory for that particular episode.
But rather, your brain collects all the bits and pieces of the graduation episode and puts them together.
Memory researcher Leslie Ungerleiter from the National Institute of Mental Health describes how the brain retrieves the memory of, for example, what you saw at the graduation.
When you recall this scene, the entire visual system then becomes active, just as it had been when you saw the scene for the first time.
And Ungerleiter's research also suggests that these different areas may be linked together in a network. That would explain why when you remember a single detail of graduation, say the color of your mother's dress, a whole flood of memories often comes unsolicited.
Because all of these memories are probably interconnected in some network of connections between various brain regions, and so simply recalling your mother brings together with it all of the associations that are connected to your mother and that event.
Jason Paul Serena. Jared Marlon Simmons.
If today you were to watch a video of your long ago graduation, would your memory of the event be precisely accurate? Probably not, says Daniel Schachter.
In remembering back to that graduation, the way in which we remember what happened may be influenced by things that have happened to us after we graduated.
In his new book, Searching for Memory, Schachter explores what people remember and what they don't.
One of the things we know about memories is that they change over time depending on how we think about them and talk about them with others.
How these forces shape and reshape the brain cells that are holding the memories is still a mystery to scientists, but it seems that memory is not a precise video playback of an event, but rather a changing image that merges past with present.
So understanding something about how accurate memory is at the level of individual events, at the level of general features of our life, is going to have an important impact on how we think about our own knowledge of ourselves.
As the Spanish filmmaker Luis Buñuel wrote, memory is what makes our lives. Our memory is our coherence, our reason, our feeling, even our action. Without it, we are nothing. I'm Michelle Trudeau reporting.
Tomorrow, a report on what scientists know about that elusive concept called consciousness.